meeting to order. The first thing on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve?
Do we have the meeting? Do we have enough people?
Yeah, we have a quorum. I'm told we have 5 here.
Yeah, we have 5. There's 9 on the account.
So we have 5.
And the second thing is approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Do we need to second that?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. On old business, I don't think there is any old business. We were discussing the Seven Falls Natural Disaster Area out in Etowah, and I'm told at the moment the county commissioners are waiting on a report from Laxley and Associates on what needs to be fixed, how much it's going to cost, and if they need a judge to sign off on it. And as soon as that report comes out, I'm supposed to get a copy, and we'll probably discuss it in the next meeting. Other than that, I'm not aware of any old business still active. On new business, there was a clean energy vehicle group wanting to make a presentation. If they would like to do it, I would give them the floor.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it. My name is Bill Aker. Listed here first on the PowerPoint. Work for Atlanta Sky Regional Council in Asheville, and I do administer various environmental programs and have for the past 32 years. And I've had the pleasure of working with Megan for the last couple of years on an all-fuel vehicles project funded by the U.S. Department of Energy, and I'll touch on that project a little bit later on, but it involves the county's compressed natural gas vehicles and refueling station just down the road. Also with me here today is Chris Dobbins. Chris, will you hand? Chris is our fleet consultant. He doesn't charge for his services, so we shouldn't call him a consultant. But anyway, he works with us. And Chris is the former City of Asheville fleet manager. Worked there for years. And while he was with the city, he built the City of Asheville's compressed natural gas fueling station, which is the first in our region. He also used biodiesel and electrics and hybrids and a full array of different alt-fuel and advanced technology vehicles, had a lot of experience. And when he retired a couple of years ago, we grabbed Chris and brought him on board part-time to work with us with our Clean Vehicles Coalition. So I was talking to Megan, and we talked about the possibility of just coming down and giving you guys a briefing on the Clean Vehicles Coalition and what this program is all about, and then answer any questions that you may have. So, Megan, is there anything you want to say before we get started, or should I just go through the presentation?
You can go on and go through it.
Okay. Also, I will say I've had the pleasure of working with John Mitchell, your new Director of Planning and Development, or...
That's close enough.
Close enough. John's formerly with U.S. Senator Burr's office, and we were very pleased that John was very interested in alternative fuel vehicles and attended a number of our meetings and events over the years. We appreciate all his support, and you've got a good man working for you now. Anyway, okay. Megan, can you change these for me, or is there a changer? Okay, all right. So anyway, about 8 years ago, Atlanta Sky Regional Council formed what's called the Atlanta Sky Clean Vehicles Coalition to promote the use of alternative fuel vehicles and advanced technology vehicles like hybrids, for example, in the Asheville metro area. And the area that we do this work in is a 5-county area, Transylvania, Henderson, Buncombe, Madison, and Haywood counties. Okay, and we've got about 500 people on our contact list, on our mailing list, folks. folks that have expressed interest in using these fuels or learning more about them, and people that have gotten actively engaged in. We've probably got about 100 people that come to our various committee meetings and all. And so the people that are involved in this, a lot of them are fleet managers. For example, Tom Wooten with the City of Hendersonville is their fleet manager, being very active in our group. And then Megan and Marcus Jones represent Henderson County on some of our committees. So we have fleet managers, we have fuel providers like the natural gas, the propane, the electric utilities. We have companies, private companies that do conversions of vehicles to natural gas or propane. We have air quality agencies involved, really anybody interested in improving air quality, promoting the use of these fuels, people that are trying to sell the fuels, the vehicles, the technologies, the fueling infrastructure. They are all part of our coalition. We call them stakeholders. So we have a steering committee, and then I'm the Clean Vehicles Coalition coordinator, and I mentioned Chris is our fleet consultant. We also have, on that first slide, was Brian Taylor, who is our manager of our electric vehicles initiative or project, which has been a big focus, of our work in the last 2 years, and is a big focus not only here in the U.S., but internationally. And then we have various working committees, and Marcus and Megan are active in several of those. Okay? Feel free to stop me. We keep this real informal if you've got any questions as I'm going through. I'm going to move pretty quickly because this PowerPoint presentation is really longer than the amount of time that I've got to present today. But our Clean Vehicles Coalition is one of 85 clean cities coalitions across the country that you see shaded in green there on the map. What happens is the federal government, Congress, back in... about 20 years ago, passed the Energy Policy Act. That act started the movement towards using alternative fuels, trying to get us off foreign oil. That became a goal of our country 20 years ago, and that law kind of launched this program. The U.S. Department of Energy is in charge of implementing the Energy Policy Act, and they created a program called Clean Cities. And so the federal government, Department of Energy, has a Clean Cities program with staff all over the country. They're associated with Oak Ridge National Lab, the NREL lab. There's one up in the Chicago area. A number of national labs that do a lot of research and technical work and analysis for the federal government. They are part of this program. And then this program is all about deployment. This is not the research program within DOE. They have other arms of DOE that do the research on vehicles, for example, like fuel cells and things of that nature. This is the deployment program. This is the program to actually get the fuels and technologies that are in place, that are on the market, actually in use. Okay, so that's what this program is all about, deployment. So how they help them or help us make this happen is they designate these different areas around the country as clean cities coalitions. Okay, those are areas, organizations around the country that have shown their interest in doing this kind of work. Promoting these fuels and technologies, okay, and they want to be a part of this national program. So it's a fairly rigorous undertaking to actually become a Clean Cities Coalition. You have to do a lot of work. You have to put a lot of all-fuel vehicles on the roads in your area. You have to show your commitment towards this program before they will actually designate you as a Clean Cities. We started our effort in 2004. Just last summer, we finally got designated as the 85th. Coalition in the country, the Clean Cities Coalition. So it took us 8 years to work towards that goal. We're real proud of that, thanks to the help of all our stakeholders. But you'll see some areas are in green are like major metro areas, like down here, the Miami-Fort Lauderdale metro area, the Atlanta area. those areas are designated. So in some cases, they're major metropolitan areas. In some cases, the entire state has been designated, like Alabama, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, the entire state. Usually the state energy office, in that case, is kind of leading the charge, is the champion in that particular community. Okay.
So you're saying North Carolina state is not leading the charge? That's what you're saying?
Well, they are very involved and very supportive, but what's happened basically at our three major metro areas, organizations in those areas kind of took the lead. So here in North Carolina, you'll see the Triangle area, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, the Triangle J Council of Governments, an organization very similar to Land and Skies, took the lead there, applied for designation. They were the first to be designated, I think, around 10 years ago. And then following them, the Charlotte area, Central Lina, Cog, took the lead there. So they've got about 8 or 9 counties they cover. And then we're the Clean Cities Coalition for the Asheville metro area. Okay. But our state energy office is very supportive. They actually were the ones that asked us to pursue that designation. They gave us some funding to support our staff towards that. So they are very supportive. But it's just the way, you know, it's played out here in North Carolina. Also, the North Carolina Solar Center within NC State University is very active in this kind of work, and we partner with them and these other Clean Cities coalitions very closely. So Chris and I go to the national regional meetings that the Department of Energy pulls together, and so what's wonderful about this program is not only do they give us a little funding now that we're designated to support our efforts, but the technical expertise that we have access to, we can pick up the phone or send an email and get information just like that from these national labs or the DOE staff. So it's really a wonderful program to be a part of. Okay, next. And there are funding opportunities also. The Department of Energy, Clean Cities, puts out funding opportunities about once a year, and I'll talk about one that we've been a part of. So these are some of the traditional alternative fuels that the Clean Cities program promotes. We are supposed to be fuel neutral. We're not supposed to favor one versus the other, but there are some in our area that have more interest. There's more interest in than others, and those are the first four that you see listed there. We've had minimal interest in ethanol here, and hydrogen is just something that it just seems like it's in the future. 15 years. Every year you go to the conference, you hear it's another 15 years before fuel cell vehicles will be viable. They exist. I drove one 5 years ago, but you know they're so expensive that you know they're not bought commercially. Yes.
What about the North Carolina Biofuel Center?
North Carolina Biofuel Center is relatively new to this whole program. Been in place, I don't know, about 5 years, I guess.
Yeah.
Very supportive. We just landed a $700,000 grant, a consortium of groups, including us, for a big biodiesel initiative.
Yeah. Okay.
Just recently. Yeah. So they are a major player.
And
their goal is to get North Carolina 10% of our transportation fuels be biofuels by 2017, I think it is, you know, another 4 or 5 years. So pretty lofty goal that the state is working towards. So those are the fuels and technologies that we're kind of focusing on in our region. Next. He's coming back.
Sorry about that.
You've heard all this before. That's been great. Next. So why is the federal government and why are we doing this? Fuel economy. Some of these fuels are cheaper to operate vehicles than others. Now, they're not always cheaper. Biodiesel historically has been a little bit more expensive than petroleum diesel. Here lately, certain blends have even been cheaper. Year or so. So it kind of goes up and down. But propane, natural gas, electric, all of those are considerably cheaper than gas and diesel right now. So some people are in it just for the money. They're trying to save on fuel costs. And that's fuel costs has been a big issue in recent years. Energy security, we talked about getting us off of oil, foreign oil, and we're moving towards that. I think we're starting to hear that we're going to be able to accomplish that in probably the next 10 years. Thank you so much. Fewer emissions, that's a goal as well. The Department of Energy is not the emissions agency, that's EPA. But they communicate, collaborate, but definitely lower emissions from all of these different fuels and technologies. Okay, next.
Speaking of energy security, are you into getting fuel here in the U.S.?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all of these alternative fuels are domestically produced.
Well, I'm talking about petroleum.
Yes.
You are for that? I mean...
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the federal government would rather use domestic oil products than foreign oil. I mean, the major goal is to get us off foreign oil, especially foreign oil from those countries that are not as friendly as Canada and Mexico, which we also get oil from.
If
so,
you go to hydrogen, hydrogen's going to come from crude oil. They'll just break it down into hydrogen.
Well, it can come from natural gas also. My understanding. I'm not a fuel cell expert because we really have no interest in it. We don't have any vehicles, so you probably know more about
it. The easiest and cheapest way to do it is to break the hydrogen off of the hydrocarbon chain.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be just as dirty because hydrogen coming out of the car will be clean, but where they're breaking it down, they're going to be doing it in advance.
Yeah. I really can't. I can't elaborate on the emissions comparisons on that, but okay. All right, so what do we do as a Clean Vehicles Coalition? This just lists some of the things that we do. We do a lot of education and outreach. We have one-on-one meetings with fleet managers. We're sitting around the table. We look at their list of vehicles and how they're fueling now and what might be a good fit for their fleet. Chris does a lot of that work because he's a former fleet manager and has a lot of credibility with those folks. I do a lot of workshops and forums, and we're out there all the time doing education outreach. We do the fleet assessments one-on-one, work a lot with local and state governments on policies, work with businesses. We're hooking up the fleet guys or the fleet managers with the fuel providers and the vehicle providers so they get to know each other and can start that dialogue. And the last one, I guess we're most popular for helping people get funding primarily from state and federal sources for their alt-fuel vehicle projects or fueling infrastructure projects. Okay? We've been pretty successful. Okay. Next. Okay, I'm not going to go through all the detail here because I don't really have time today, but if you have any questions about any of these fuels, I've also got a few fact sheets. Matter of fact, let's pass these around. Going to give you quite a bit more information about the Clean Cities program, what's going on with all fuels in our regions, things that Chris put together. This last piece here is a listing of all the electric vehicle charging stations. And we'll talk a little bit about those in a few minutes. So biodiesel is one of the more popular alternative fuels, especially in this area. A lot of benefits. It is domestically produced, can come from soil oil, vegetable oils, also from waste vegetable oil from restaurants. And that's how we're producing our biodiesel here locally. We have a company in Asheville called Blue Ridge Biofuels. It's been in place about 8 years, I guess, as long as we have as a coalition, that makes biodiesel from waste vegetables from restaurants and cafeterias. And a very successful company that's been growing quite a bit. And so they are the provider of most of the biodiesel in our area. And you can just see a listing there on the far right of some of the entities that are using biodiesel at various blends. The really hardcore folks that drive the Mercedes in Asheville, you know, they're driving or they're purchasing, say, B90, B99, very high blends of biodiesel, almost pure biodiesel. Other folks that aren't as hardcore about all this, you know, they might be using B5, B10, a much lower blend, but they are using some, okay? So this helps us get off foreign oil, and it's got many environmental benefits. Pretty much the same properties as petroleum diesel. Next. Again, I'm not going to go into all the details. You can just see that's one of the stations there in West Asheville, over Amboy Road, that is selling biodiesel. See some of the fuel prices. These were probably a couple of months ago, Chris. Chris does a quarterly report to the Department of Energy. That's one of the things we have to do to DOV is we have to give them a quarterly report on the price of these fuels in our region and stations. Okay, next. Okay. Okay, so we've got about 8 commercial gas stations in the region. Most of those, probably 6 of those or so, are in 7 of those are in Buncombe County. We do not have a commercial station in Henderson County or Transylvania selling biodiesel. We would like to work with someone to open one. Many of those have received some federal grant funding to help purchase the tanks and dispensers. Put those in. We worked with Blue Ridge Biofuels who made all of that happen. Got several petroleum suppliers. Henderson Oil is one of the companies in the area that sells biodiesel. They purchase it from Blue Ridge Biofuels and sell it to several customers, including the county and the city here locally. And one of the challenges Blue Ridge Biofuels has is getting enough feedstock, which is that used cooking oil, to make more biodiesel. That's one of their challenges, so we're trying to help them with that. And last year they started a CORE program, a community oil recycling, where they will offer these bins that you can put out at locations just like your recycling bins, and people can take their vegetable oil from home and put it in, and they come around and collect that. So it's one of their programs, so techniques for trying to collect more of their feedstock. But we're also interested in talking to restaurants, especially Asian. They have really high-quality, clean cooking oil, so they're high on the list to work with. Get oil from them. And lastly, this field to fryer to fuel F3 initiative that was started last year with the Biltmore State. You may have read Biltmore's growing 60 acres of canola to get the seeds to produce the vegetable oil, to make the vegetable oil using their restaurants and other restaurants in Asheville. And those restaurants will give that oil back to Blue Ridge Biofuels to make fuel. But then Biltmore State and other fleets can use. So we're going to be growing it and producing the oil and then recycling that oil right into use by vehicles. So it's a very, really popular project. And that grant I mentioned earlier, the big $700,000 grant from the Biofuel Center, a big chunk of that money is going to go towards the second phase of this F3 project. Next. Had a lot of interest in natural gas also. I mentioned Chris opened the first public access CNG station downtown across from McCormick Field where the tourist baseball team plays. And been in place about 8 years. So Asheville's been using it in their fleet. Mission Hospital using it. AT&T deployed 16 vans a couple years ago to natural gas. They're doing this all over the country. A lot of your big national corporations are switching over to alternative fuels as quickly as they can. FedEx, UPS, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, AT&T. Some of them are doing it for the environmental, the sustainability goals. Others are doing it for fuel save or cost on fuel because some of these fuels are quite a bit cheaper. So both compressed natural gas and liquefied LNG natural gas. We don't have any LNG in use in this area or any fueling, but we do have quite a bit of natural gas being used. And different types of stations. I'm not going to go into all those details next. fuel cost, $2.16. I think it was $2.19, was it?
$2.19.
County station here, we just drove through there. See the price. So compare that to diesel prices, especially, and you can see why people are so interested in going to natural gas or to propane.
These are all corrected to energy density.
Yeah.
So I mean,
this one is for natural gas, right?
Yes. Gas gallon equivalent.
Gas gallon equivalent (GGEs). Yeah. You can see quite a bit expensive to convert the vehicles to natural gas. That's one of the challenges with converting to natural gas. And then putting in a station yourself can be quite a bit quite expensive unless you can find some grant sources. And most of the entities in our area have received some grants to go towards this. That is the Hendersonville, is that the street sweeper? Chris, I think it's the City of Hendersonville Street Sweeper. That was purchased with a Department of Energy grant that I think I'm going to talk about on the next slide. Go ahead. So, the first public access station was City of Asheville. Then Altec Eco is a company that converts vehicles down in Arden. They built a station on Hendersonville Road. Henderson County opened their station last year. And then PSNC Energy, their natural gas provider in this region, is building. building the station at this time. It's supposed to be ready, I think, in April. So we will have four public access CNG stations, and that's a really good number for a fairly small metropolitan area. There are entire states that don't even have compressed natural gas stations, like South Carolina was one. Virginia has very few. So just our region right here, we're doing better than some entire states. A lot of interest in this field here. I mentioned Altec Eco, the other conversion facility here. They do really good work. And then the Carolina Blue Skies Department of Energy grant, that's the grant I've referred to a couple of times. That was a $12 million stimulus grant that we were a part of. There are about six different entities in North and South Carolina all joined together to apply for this one big grant, $12 million, and we were able to secure that for this Carolina Blue Skies Green Jobs Initiative. About $1 million of that came to four projects here in the Asheville area that Chris and I have been overseeing. And that included the expansion of the Asheville and Henderson County CNG stations. They were already, you know, in need of expansion, more capacity, because more vehicles are using them. So a good chunk of that money went to expanding those two stations. And then the rest of the money was used to help pay the extra cost to do the conversions of pickup trucks, sweeper, dump trucks for Hendersonville, recycling truck. Mission Hospital is a partner in this, City of Asheville as well. So it took a total of 37 vehicles. It's been a really big project. A lot of paperwork. Next. And this is the project that I've worked with Marcus and Megan on primarily the last year. They've been in contact with the county's project. Propane is another domestic fuel, gaseous fuel that is really popular, really hot right now. That and electric are probably the two hottest fuels right now because of its cost. And because propane is easier to get into than natural gas. It's cheaper to convert the vehicles, and the fueling infrastructure is considerably cheaper. And you can actually work with the Blossom Gas company here locally that we work with and actually get the fueling infrastructure for free. They basically put the cost of that in the fuel contract, you know, that they signed with you and recoup their cost. But because of that, it's been very popular. The Biltmore State did two shuttles about a year or so ago, liked it a lot. They just applied for a grant. They're doing three more, is it?
Four shuttles and two support vehicles.
Right, doing more with a grant we just helped them get from the state. So Biltmore's really moving in that direction. Mountain Mobility, community transportation system like your Apple Country Transit here, they're using propane and natural gas. Your Apple Country is going to natural gas on their shuttles. Buncombe County Sheriff's Department. You can flip to the next slide. Anyway, you can just see the cost there. Buncombe County Sheriff converted 10 vehicles, Crown Vicks, with a Federal Department of Energy grant last year. Sheriff Ben Duncan is so happy that he wants his personal vehicle converted. So they are interested in doing more. So there might be a project for Henderson County law enforcement, the Sheriff's Department, to look into. They're saving a lot of money on fuel. You just see some of the stats there, how much cheaper it is to get into propane. Okay, next. Just some of those entities that I just mentioned. These propane roadshows are education outreach events. We did one last May at the Biltmore State. That had 60 people come out and had vehicles on display. That's what we did. And there's a conversion facility, a German Motor Works on Sweet Creek Road in Asheville, South Asheville. They also have a fueling pump there, propane pump that you can use. Next. I don't know what happened to my photograph. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, electric vehicle is another really hot alternative fuel or advanced technology vehicle. They're here. Started here about 3 years ago. These high-speed electric vehicles, plug-in vehicles were coming. Started hearing about the Chevy Bolt and the Nissan Leaf, and they started arriving in the dealerships. People started buying them. You may know the mayor of Hendersonville, Barbara Volk, owns a Chevy Bolt, loves it. And the
has been very active in our electric vehicles committee and helped us with a lot of education and outreach. So the vehicles are here and more are on the way. Ford's just now launching their plug-in hybrid vehicles and pure electric vehicles as well. So you'll be seeing those in the Ford dealership probably later this year. But there's a lot of other companies that are putting out high-speed electrics. We've had the low-speed electrics, you know, the little gym vehicles, you know, go about 25 miles an hour. The Asheville's use those, and I think Henderson Sheriff's has one. And, those have been around for quite some time, but these are high-speed vehicles, very nice vehicles. Next. The two that I mentioned, these are the most popular. On the left, the city of Asheville just bought a Chevy Bolt for its police department, and they plug in at their charging station on Charlotte Street, right downtown. Next, Bunker County just bought one as well, just a couple months ago. These are just some of the properties, some key information about each of these vehicles. There's two basic types of plug-in vehicles, okay? Your pure electric car, battery, electric motor only, that's the Nissan Leaf, okay, on the right. Only electric, no gasoline used at all. Has a limited range, okay? When you run out of electricity, you're out, okay? Those people have what's called range anxiety. They're worried they're going to run out. That's why we're putting charging stations in, primarily for those folks. On the left, the Chevy Volt is not pure electric. It runs about 35, 40 miles on electric first, and then the gas kicks in. There's a gas generator that recharges the batteries. It still runs as an electric car, but the gas is basically helping to generate the electricity. So in addition to the 35 or 40, you get another 350 miles from the gas. So it's like driving just a regular hybrid gas electric. These cars are not necessarily inexpensive. I just got some updated figures from Nissan just a couple hours ago. They came out with an S model this year. That's their low-end model of the Leaf, and it's down to $28,000. Then you take the $7,500 federal tax credit. That's a credit, not a deduction, on any of these vehicles, and that helps a lot. Okay, next. We now have about 100 vehicles. I just got a phone call. I got that number updated by Brian on our staff. And growing every day. I was just talking to the Nissan dealer, the salesman, just a minute ago. They can't keep the Leaf on the lot. I was asking him to bring one out to an event 2 weeks. He says, I don't know that I'll have one. He says they're flying out of here. So that's good news. This just shows some of the dealers that are selling the Leaf and the Bolt, or the Mitsubishi iNav vehicle, which we're not real impressed with. It's not as solid a vehicle as this other two. Okay, so you've got a couple dealers here in Henderson County selling these vehicles. Okay, next. So what we have been doing for our electric vehicles committee is pulling all the interested parties together, public, private sector folks, car dealers. The Eaton Corporation, if you don't know, in Arden, is making the charging stations for electric vehicles. They make a level 2 charging station, which is the most popular. That's what we're deploying in the region. They also are making something called a DC fast charger that can charge an electric vehicle in about 20 minutes. But right now, they're very, very expensive, so there aren't many of them out there. But they are making those, so we've got jobs being created and or retained here because of this electric drive initiative. Worked very closely with Progress Energy and now with Duke and some of the communities you see listed there. We got a grant a year and a half ago from our state energy office to allow us to help pay the cost of putting in some charging stations. And so that's why you see that we've got 20 locations in our region and we've got about 40 charging cords at 20 locations. Here in Henderson County, Blue Ridge Community College has put in a couple. The city of Hendersonville put two chargers in the Dogwood parking lot.
How do they take them? I don't mean the municipality, how do the customers?
Right now, for the most part, because most of these are grant funded, there is no charge. At least for a year or two, that was the condition of the grant. So at some point, those host sites or the owners of those charters will start deciding if they want to charge, if they want to even. It's not really costing them very much right now because there aren't that many vehicles. It's kind of a chicken egg thing. You got to get the charging stations out there so people feel comfortable buying the vehicles. Right. Then the vehicles will come. But so over time, there'll be more use and at some point they're going to start charging.
Has a study been done on how long the car is going to sit at these charging stations to charge at a time?
Yeah, we're not involved in any of the studies, but a group, Advanced Energy in Raleigh, that the utility support, they are doing a lot of research right now. Progress Energy is doing a lot of research. Progress put in some charging stations specifically for the purpose of collecting data for their study. Next week we'll be in Raleigh. Mayor Volk will be with us. And we have a statewide task force, electric vehicle task force, that some of the usage studies will be discussed at that meeting. So we'll hear how things are going. But most people are going to use these public access stations basically to top off, I guess you'd call it. Okay, they're not there. They're coming to downtown Hendersonville to get full charge. They'll just top off while they're there for an hour or two. Most of the charging, I don't think we have a diagram on this, but most of the charging is going to be done at home in your garage or driveway. And that's the way we want it because there's more capacity in the grid at night. Okay, so we don't have to build more power plants to handle that extra capacity.
And the voltage is a factor too. Kevin's question is it'll take about 4 to 16 hours to charge, depending on your voltage requirements.
It really depends on the car and its capacity.
Right.
I'd be interested in the human behavior behind it and how many stations you'd actually need on an average charge if people are sitting there for 2 hours. You got two stations. Now you got a geographical location with 100 cars. How are they going to compete for two stations for 2 hours throughout the day at a particular location?
Right.
So something on that line.
Yeah. Right now we're not seeing much competition for the system, but that's coming. So we'll have more systems out there as we go.
Seeing when they got popular, the best place to put them would be at a restaurant where people can park and then go in and eat for an hour.
Yeah.
It would benefit the restaurant to have them, and it would benefit the people. And
some restaurant chains have already recognized that. Matter of fact, Cracker Barrel all across the state of Tennessee has been putting level 2 chargers in some DC fast charges as well under a big national program that they're a part of. Starbucks, places like that are starting to put them in just to drive people to their business. Here's the diagram. Most of the charging will be done at home, some at work, and then there'll be some public access, parking lots, garages, that sort of thing, where people can get a charge if they need it. This is the next big focus. The federal government, DOE, just came out a couple months ago with a workplace charging challenge. And they are challenging big companies, and GE is one of them. You have a GE plant here. Siemens, Duke Power, there are a number of entities that have already joined on with DOE under this challenge. They're going to start putting chargers in for their employees at their facilities around the country. So all of us in the business are going to be doing a lot of work on workplaces over the next couple of years as part of this federal program. Next. And this just gets into the different types of chargers. Level 1 is basically the 120. You can just plug in at home at your regular outlet, but it's going to take you 16 to 20 hours to charge your car overnight. That's very, very slow. Level 2 is what most of the chargers across the country are level 2. And here's the what you were asking, how much charge you get. About 10 to 20 miles per hour. Okay? So, if you have a Chevy Volt and it's about 30 to 40 mile range, you're fully depleted on Chevy Volt, it would take you 3 to 4 hours to recharge that. So
that's the consideration.
Okay. Realize that this industry is in its infancy. Okay. You can't compare it to conventional cars and fuels. I mean, this is all in its infancy. There are hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars going into research at NC State and Purdue and universities all over the country battery research. Most of the cost of these cars is in batteries. They're trying to get the cost of these cars down in, say, the next 10 years to what conventional cars are. That's the major challenge right now. The charging station cost will come down as well. And then you can see the DC fast charge that Eaton has there. They're pretty expensive systems. Next. And this is just showing the growth in the number of vehicles, PEVs, and the public charging stations, the EVSCs. These are the projections for our five-county area. There's an Electric Power Research Institute, EPRI, that has done all kinds of research and projections for the country. And that's where we're getting most of these numbers from, for our projections. So you can see what they're projecting. Quite a few. There's an article in today's Wall Street Journal about electric vehicles. I didn't have a chance to look at it, but Lydia in my office flashed it at me. But somebody with Chrysler, I think it was, talking about the percentage of cars in, say, 10 years from now that will be electric drive. It's going to be very high. The only way we're going to meet the new federal fuel economy standards that were adopted last year is going towards electric. Next. And so we partnered with a number of groups, the utilities and some other Clean Cities coalitions, Advanced Energy in Raleigh. We also secured, this was a $500,000 grant from the Department of Energy we secured to develop electric vehicle plans for the state of North Carolina. And we just finished the plan for the Asheville area. Our electric vehicle committee was involved in that, developing that. Was just released last week, as well as the plans for the other major metro areas in the state. And we will be discussing that and celebrating that next week in Raleigh at a statewide task force meeting. Okay, next. So I've got a couple of copies of the executive summary of that plan if anyone is interested. I've got them over here in my place. Something else we promote is DMT, vehicle miles traveled, reduction activities like park and ride, carpooling, idle reduction programs, things of that nature. There's some other things that Department of Energy wants us to promote. Basically, getting people out of their cars or having them drive less or drive more fuel-efficient, low-emission vehicles. Next. And this is kind of just showing the progress over the last 3-4 years that our coalition, cities, counties, private sector entities have all achieved. Using these various technologies. So you can see pretty significant growth in our area. And we have to do an inventory of who's using these fuels and vehicles and all these different technologies every year for the Department of Energy. And it's due next Friday. And so Chris and I are working on that and surveying everybody on, you know, how many more vehicles did you buy this year? You know, how much fuel are you using? Did you put in your charging stations, fuel stations, that sort of thing? Okay? Next. You can go to the next one. And that's it. Sorry if I took longer than I should. But. Other questions? Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you realize it, but the Department of Defense is one of the biggest proponents of biofuels on the planet because they need it.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know if you have any.
I haven't had any interactions with the military, but you're right. The military is going towards alternative fuels of electric vehicles also. Yeah, they see advantages to that when they're in the field to be able to use these fuels and technologies. So, yeah, the federal government, especially the military, they're really leading the charge on this stuff. And the military is not doing it for environmental reasons.
No.
It's security.
And it's not just any one fuel in there. It's ethanol, it's biodiesel, it's SVO, yeah. It's straight vegetable oil, it's all every brand.
And you're making a good point. It's not one fuel or technology necessarily that's best for your fleet. It's usually a combination of things. Just like Asheville, you know, they had some electric vehicles, they had some natural gas, you know, they had a variety of things. As far as propane and natural gas, one thing you might want to know is to convert a vehicle to propane and natural gas, you have to get a certificate from the EPA that shows that your conversion kit does not increase emissions. They don't want people messing with vehicles and increasing emissions, okay? So you have to do all this very expensive emissions testing. That's what Alltech Eco does. You know, $50,000 for a certification for one make and model, say like a Ford F-250. It costs them that much just to get that certification that allows them to do the conversions. Because of that, there's very limited number of vehicles that you can legally convert. Okay, you have to have an EPA certification. So if you see on the internet you can get this kit from Mexico or whatever, put it on your car, you're going to be in violation. So beware. You want to make sure you're doing it properly.
Yes. Why would you want a mix of fuels in a fleet?
Just different fuels or technologies are best for different applications. I mean, look at the, and with the city of Asheville or Hendersonville, how many different types of vehicles, on-road and off-road, you know, that are using petroleum. So, you know, electric vehicles have a particular niche, you know, biodiesel a particular niche. One thing about biodiesel I didn't mention to you all, there's no conversion required. That's one of the best things about biodiesel. You can start using it today. If you've got a diesel vehicle, you can go down to the station, put biodiesel in your tank, at whatever blend you want. The only thing you need to be aware of is that it's a solvent, and it will start cleaning out all that gunk in your tank, and your fuel filters can clog. So they tell everybody that up front, that this is likely to happen, and so you just need to change out your fuel filter. Once that gunk is cleaned out, then you're in good shape. There's no extensive conversion required. You mentioned straight vegetable oil. There is a conversion kit for that.
Well,
that is not a federally approved product.
Yeah, two totally different.
That's different than biodiesel.
One changes the fuel, the other changes the components. And also heating fuel. I mean, I know it's not a vehicle, but biodiesel is a big proponent of clean heat.
Yeah. Blue Ridge Biofuels will sell you bioheat, they call it. They probably are selling it here in Henderson County. Any other questions? So if you know folks with a fleet, even if it's one car or vehicle that would be interested in any of this, just have them give us a call. Okay? Thank you all for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have two new members on the board, a Mrs. Patricia Dan and a Mrs. Francie Harrell. So if I got your names right, if you'd like to introduce yourself, that's fine. If you wouldn't, that's good too.
Okay, that's good.
I've been working for the last 3 months on eliminating plastic bags from Henderson County. Everybody knows you go to the store, you pick up these bags, they tear, they break, they drop your groceries on the ground, but they're free, so people use them for the convenience. The cloth, the canvas bags, they hold more, they don't break, but people have to remember to carry them to the store with them. These bags, just for the numbers, there are about 118,000 residents in Henderson County. Each person uses about 5 bags a week. That's 580,000 bags going into the landfill. Less than 1% of them nationally are recycled. If you add that up over a month, 4.5 weeks, you have 2.6 million of these bags going into the landfill. Take 2.6 million of these, you can fill up the old courthouse at least once a month with plastic bags just being thrown away. I've talked to Ingalls, and they're talking about making canvas bags like these in the school colors for the 4 high schools, you know, West Henderson, North Hendersonville, and East. And they'll have the school logo, the school colors. And when people go to scan the bag to put their groceries in it, every time they scan the bag from north, west, east, the school will receive a 5-cent credit toward that school. These bags are not free. They cost the stores 4 cents each for every bag that they provide customers. These bags have been outlawed in about 10 or 12 different countries. Nationally, they've been done away with in about 25 states. The best way to get rid of the bags is for the state or a local government to put a 5 cent surcharge per bag. People going in, they go, I'm not paying 5 cents a bag, so they'll take the store bag, which most stores give away free, or you can get for like 99 cents, and you do away with 2.5 million bags hitting your garbage every month in Henderson County. Nationally, it's in the billions of bags, and they say it takes 400 million barrels of crude oil per year to keep up with the bag industry. So, as a committee, I would like for us to recommend to the county commissioners that they add a 5 cent surcharge for each plastic bag to encourage the residents to stop using them. I can pass the bag around. I'm sure all of you have seen them. Do we have any comments or motions to second?
Yes, sir. You held up there. It says Harris Teeter on the bottom.
Yeah.
Harris Teeter is the only grocery store in the area that has signs in the parking lot where you put your carts in that says, did you remember to take your parfait? So at Eagle, we have a project where we're going to get in touch with all the grocery stores for them to copy Harris Teeter and put up those signs in the parking lot to remind people to use their parfait.
If you would like the contact information at Ingles, his name is Tom Savage.
T-O-M?
T-O-M, S-A-V-A-G-E.
Okay.
T-Savage at Ingles-Market.com.
Ingles-Dash?
Dash, not underscore, dash, markets.com.
Okay, thank you.
And it's T-Savage. It's the seat down. And he's the one I'm working with on getting the school bags done. And if you'd like my phone number, I can give you that, and I would be more than happy to work with you on the
Excellent.
Project.
Excellent.
I have a question. How does the price of the paper bags compare? 4 cents each on these plastics. What would a paper bag the store?
I don't know. I don't think the stores even carry them anymore.
That is recyclable right now.
Yeah.
I always purposely ask for a paper bag.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't recommend to the county commissioners that they put a surcharge on paper bags.
No.
Simply because the stores aren't likely to swap to them. But, what I was wanting to do was put a proposal to the commissioners that they start placing a surcharge on bags to eliminate them entirely from Henderson County, with hopes that the adjoining counties would soon follow suit.
I want to let the committee know, legally the county cannot place a tax on plastic bags unless they get permission from the state of North Carolina. I spoke with our attorney's
Charlie
office.
Charlie Messer is working on that now.
I spoke with our attorney's office before I came down here, and they wanted me to let the committee know that legally the county cannot do that without the state's permission. So you can request the county do that, but they can't do anything unless the state gives them permission.
Can I ask a question? Do you know what Ingles does with the plastic bags that you can take there for recycling? Because that's where I take them. I take them just inside the front door. There's always a bin for plastic bags.
Now, I am told that they recycle them, but what they receive back is just a mere fraction of what they give out. The national average. average is less than 1% of them get recycled.
I recycle mine through my home. All my plastic bags go and go up. I recycle my bag and pick up by my camera.
Well, your waste haul gets your plastic bags up. Cool. Well, I
picked up other recyclables.
Sorry, I'm not serving on the committee, but Recycling Committee did a survey of local grocery stores, and it's been a while back, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, just to ask very specific questions like Bill asked. So what happens at the back of the store when the bins are, you know, emptied of the plastic bag? And we were assured by all the grocery stores that they are collected, and they do go to the Ingalls warehouse in Black Mountain, and when they get a truckload full, then, you know, we can't remember exactly, but we did report on that. You know, it may be plastic lumber.
That's typically, from all the recycling conferences I go to, plastic lumber is typically what those plastic bags get turned into.
Either a number two or
there's a bunch of different vendors out there, companies that take them and turn them. There's numerous companies that do that. So, Ingles, the grocery stores have enough that they can get a tractor trailer load frequently enough, and they are sent to, that's what I've been told, the same thing. So
if the bag's torn, it doesn't matter?
No, it doesn't matter if it's torn, as long as it's clean. If it gets, you know, dirty, with, that's the problem with, you know, at the convenience center, a lot of times people thought that we took those plastic bags for recycling, so they fill up all their soda cans, you know, and it would get dirty, and then they thought that we could just recycle the bags. We can't accept them because we don't have enough volume. They've tried it in a lot of counties much larger than ours, and it was unsuccessful. The grocery stores, however, is successful. Even though it is that small percentage, it's much more than what we could get gathering for recycling. As long as it's clean, it can be recycled. That's what I'm told.
Whether we're successful with the county or not, would anyone like to second the motion?
I'm against the plastic bags for you, but I'm not for a trash.
Yeah, I'd like to take one.
How else would you get people to stop using that?
Well, like I said, I don't. Yeah, for one thing, get more current facts on other people that are doing this. You say that 25 states already have now. We had all this stuff tabulated, and they're fairly pointed out. And people might say, oh, we're right in line. You know,
California was the first, and by putting a nickel per bag, they took them out of the state entirely. So without government, nothing gets done. I mean, I'm not a big fan of government, but without government, there wouldn't be any roads to get around anywhere. No one's forcing them to stop using them. They're giving them an economic reason not to.
It's the government's
fault. Yeah. There's no part of your life that the government is not involved.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, we'll try to lessen.
Yeah.
That's it. We will adjourn. And thank you all for attending.
Everyone make sure they signed in, please. And just remember, our next meeting is June 1st, Thursday in June. But we'll send out the agenda about a week ahead of time, like normal.
Is there any way to access these individuals that can see the presentation?
Oh, they have their emails up there.